top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, Guillermo Mash, welcoming you to the Pledge Drive, Spring Pledge Drive edition of the Without a Roof Radio program. Got to get that number out there as quickly as possible. You know, we're doing a virtual Spring Pledge Drive due to the, I guess you probably already know why we're doing it virtually. But I do have Senior Felipe in the house. He's not virtual. I get to see. This is kind of cool coming back on the radio, baby.
I love Senior.
I'm back on the radio for the pandemic, and I get to see Senior Felipe every day.
Thank you.
Every day. Every Wednesday. Feels like every day, Phil. Yeah, baby.
Thank you, brother.
But the number, you know what we're doing? We got a different pledge drive number. And basically, you leave a voicemail, and our very talented staff and volunteers will get back to you. And that is 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. And that is your call-in number to make your pledge and donation. You can also find out a heck of a lot more and donate online if you'd like. Go to our homepage, kzfr.org/donate. But I do appreciate all the listeners, supporters, underwriters, and just all of the heroes, if not for one day. Speaking of one day, I'm on one day a week, 5 to 6, and that appears to be the time that we have right now. And I'm going to do just a quick backstory on what the show was going to be. I'm like the editorial staff of One. Originally had this great idea going up to Concow and being embedded up there and covering the story. And I got a little sick. I didn't get something, but I did get a little sick. A little mental health stuff. Just, you know, needed some downtime. And I'm back. I'm back with a vengeance. I plan on getting up there. Believe me, I'm going to do that. Then I had a secondary idea. I'm like, you know what? Everyone's sick of hearing about the pandemic. Let me just play Voices from the Street. I mean, my favorite thing that I did in the 8 years of Without a Roof is just talking to the everyday man, the everyday woman, the everyday child, and getting their stories. And then I go, well, you know what? There's a lot going on in Chico with the pandemic, and people like my broadcast journalism. So I blended it. I came up with one of my favorite clips that I'm going to lead the show with. And then after that, we're going to hear from Chris Constantine, the economic director for Chico, talking about how we're going to safely bring businesses back, essential and non-essential. When I say back, you know, in business, they're still there. We still love them, and we still miss them. And I also have our weekly segment, Joy Amaro, and she's going to be talking about things she's done on her desk and things she's doing on her desk and things that will get done on her desk as Chico's homeless solutions coordinator. And then I always like talking to Addison, a friend of mine, known him for years, love him like a son. And he's one of the outreach coordinators for the encampments, the shelter-in-place guidelines that are out there for people without roofs that are actually sheltering with, you know, no place to be. So I've been telling people, you know, you think you got your shelter-in-place is rough? Go to Guillermo's wall. I'll show you some people who got it perhaps a little bit rougher. But here we go. This one, I wanted to give you a backstory on this, too. You know, Life on the Poor Track, you know, was filmed. This is a film I did in 2013. I was actually staying at Chris Solberg. He's a well-known advocate. Shout out to Chris and all the work he's doing up there. I was staying at his place, you know, and I'm after a few days, I'm like, I'm heading out to Riverfront Park, man. I'm going to get embedded. So I was without a roof out there in the Riverfront Park. I think it's called the Sundial Bridge, pretty close to that. Interviewing Life on the Poor Track. And all of this is actually filmed and produced in Reading from December of 2013. And with no more further ado, and I'll give you more further ado, call the number. I know you love this station. I love this station. I've met so many cool people. There's so much talent in this building that comes and goes through this elevator. It's amazing. Support amazing. 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. Leave a voicemail. Tell us how much you love us, how much you can donate. You know, we still like those, you know, monthly subscribers that, you know, have a small amount. Yes, or maybe a big amount. Just donate $1,000 a month. That'll help us a lot. But anyway, Life on the Poor Tracks here on People Power Radio.
Drugs or whatever, or they're out paranoid. Yeah, it's right. Really funny because they'll hear that go off and then they're all looking around like, where in the heck did that come from?
Skitsy and stuff.
Out of your backpack, you mean?
Out of my backpack.
Awesome.
He's cute.
This is Chris the Carver with his wonderful piece of wood. We thought it looked like a hatchet. You love the carve, huh, Chris?
When I got something in mind.
You were kind of bragging about your improvising for your glasses so you could see. Let's see what we got here.
Okay. That'll work, dude. Huh?
He's got like two sets of glasses, one to hold the other set on, man.
It'll work.
Oh, those are Dollar Tree stores?
These are dollar, all my glasses. Yeah.
Are they just reading glasses?
Yeah.
What kind? What's your power? What do you need?
Oh, I'm up to, about 250.
All right, I'll get you a 250.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you one right now. I got an extra set, dude. Oh, I swear to God. This is way cool over here. I've never been over this way. It's such a beautiful river. It's a beautiful park.
Yeah, early in the morning when I'm here, I'll show you Big John.
Yeah? What's a good day out here?
What do you mean, catching wise?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just two or three, you know.
Hey, yeah.
Four, but if they're this big, you know.
That's a lot of fish.
I've done it all, you know. I've lived on the streets. I've rode freight trains, and I used to manage five pawn shops and all that. And I had my own antique collectible shop, you know, all over the place.
Yeah. But got any advice for anyone out here on Reading that would see us?
Run. And I'm not saying this because I want them out of here. I'm saying this because it's smart. You can be homeless and you can be poor anywhere. So you might as well be bubbling away in a hot spring somewhere. That's the I used to look at it.
How long you been out here?
This trip since February 1999. Wow. Out of McKinleyville.
Bless you. Got a nice smile.
Bank of America threw me out with my checkbook.
That's a story for a lot of people. What's the nicest thing about Reading? What do you like about Reading?
We finally got to fire Steve Jobs.
Is that what you liked about Reading?
Yeah.
Reading's the one that fired him?
Yeah, and I got him on a credit card now and not a paper check.
Got to be bigger charge for it. That's it, man. That's a scoop right there from the streets of Reading.
Go, Steve Jobs.
Went to the same elementary school.
Yes.
Well, you guys have known each other. You know, I ask people frequently how long you've known this particular person. That's the longest I've ever heard. That is so cool.
I think we could document 40 years between him and I. And then I got another 10 with his biological donor.
Uh-huh.
Because they ran the amusement parks for SeaWorld.
Cool.
So that's where this one comes from.
You come from an amusement park at SeaWorld.
I guess this whole world's kind
That's
of
another scoop.
Yes.
Fern has all the scoops.
He's a biological one.
I love it when somebody is my friend and they can the still hold me up the right way or, you know, just decently take care of each other. And which, you know, you kind of feel like it's holding up your time or something once in a while because, you know, you're living like as like almost friction. Mm-hmm. But instead you're not,
yeah.
And you're getting along just well. Nobody's beating anybody up. you're trying to keep everybody else off of you and things like that because you barely even getting up yourself?
I was so worried with my little guy. He was born in 1993, and his father was a computer genius. The baby was a master with the little Nintendo already, just barely two. He's 21 now, and he could be dressed as a police officer right now, and I wouldn't recognize him. And he would get along fine with all them machines on him.
Yeah.
I'm a wreck. I look at him, I'm like, I have probation aggravation from the vibration.
Give me five, Gary. Love these guys. You guys are awesome.
You even put your name on there, dude.
Right on, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You like those?
No, I like that. I can smell
that. Give me five.
Got to do a shout out for our backline folks and Grant Parks in particular, the office manager, because we just installed a new sound card. And it was kind of interesting. And the sound card has a problem. He's already contacted the tech people. But as you listen to that, you could tell it was just a little bit slower than it should have been. So I've never heard it quite like that, but it was playable. If you want to hear it with my fast Boston talking, you can go out on my Facebook wall, Guillermo Mash, and I will certainly post that up. The next interview up, I was kind of out on Facebook, and I'd seen a friend, a business owner, that had posted some questions around reopening her business and how she'd been given some direction from the city on doing that. So I had reached out to Chris Constantine, the assistant city manager, and he is the economic director as well. And anyway, he is the one responsible for making sure that we are taking care of business, not Barkman Turner Overdrive, but taking care of business, kind of looking at, you know, how business is going to reopen and how they can get support through federal and state programs. But folks that are listening, you are indeed listening to Without a Roof, and we are made possible. Generous contributions, KZ for supporters, and by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, cross-country skiing, camping, and just enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is located in downtown Chico at 176 East 3rd Street. Their telephone number is 345-5011. And we're also made possible. Generous contributions, the supporters, and by Bankruptcy Law Offices of Michael O'Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael O'Hayes offers consultations for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies for residents of Northern California residents for over 30 years. Telephone number, Michael O'Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or mhayslaw.com. I think that's really appropriate that we are calling out our underwriters as we transition to this segment here because, you know, underwriters keep us on the air and, you know, we were mourning. I don't know if mourning's the right word. It came to my mind that, you know, a wonderful weekly publication who literally, you know, they didn't have enough cash flow because all the businesses are closed. So let's support our businesses. Let's support local print. Let's support community. Be kind, be gentle, be you here on People Powered Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash here with a pre-record for the April 22nd edition of the Without a Roof Radio program here on KZFR 90.1, our Pledge Drive show. And I'm pleased to have Chris Constantine, the Assistant City Manager for the City of Chico. Well, welcome to KZFR 90.1 FM, Chris Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Mash. It's nice to be here.
Perhaps a quick introduction on what our listeners need to know about your role as Assistant Manager and how that plays into the pandemic and your responsibilities as Economic Director for the City of Chico.
So as Assistant City Manager, I'm the number two to the City Manager, and my responsibilities span across every department and program. And one of my primary roles is being responsible for all economic development in the business community and in the economy, and ensuring that the vitality of our businesses is the most it could be.
Hey, so you'll be responsible for coming up with plans to kind of safely reopen businesses in Chico, or maybe a little detail around, you know, what you're working on in regards to the pandemic response?
Well, for the pandemic, I've been working with our economic development partners through a partnership called Team Chico, which includes the Chico Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown Chico Business Association, Butte College, the University, the Alliance for Workforce Development, 3CORE, and the Butte College Training Place. So, and together, what we've been doing is first engaging businesses and educating, and as the federal programs came down, ensuring that businesses knew how to access those programs, and at the same time engaging and determining what level of impact we're seeing in the community so that we could adjust our response.
So what is the response or the city direction at this moment in time, afternoon of April 22nd, as it relates to businesses that are non-essential, and what type of business activities should they be doing?
Well, there was the state order that came from the governor's office, went into effect in March 19th. And what we did immediately after that is our code enforcement folks went out and educated businesses, more specifically the ones that would have been deemed non-essential under that order, to educate them about the order and what it said. We were not forcibly closing or forcibly citing businesses that were open. What had happened was a request that, you know, we asked for folks to take personal responsibility in their businesses, and you know, quite a large number of businesses decided to close to comply with the order. Today, what we're doing, we rolled out on Monday an exposure reduction program. So our code enforcement folks are going out to all businesses, irrespective of if they're deemed essential or non-essential under the federal guidance, to indicate the type of measures that they need to put into place to reduce exposure to both their employees and their customers. In my mind, every business in the city of Chico is essential to us, irrespective of what somebody else may call them. And a virus doesn't distinguish between a person that's in an essential business and a person that's in a non-essential business. So realistically, the focus needs to be on exposure reduction.
So how would our listeners get a hold of that plan? Is it out there in the public sphere so they can kind of take a gander at it? Or how do we get that out to our listeners?
There's a couple of ways. First, on our front of page of the website at the top, there'll be a introduction to this new exposure reduction program. It'll say City Begins Education Campaign on Exposure Reduction. So all the forms and documents that are necessary are there, as well as the background. Secondly, for any business that's open right now, and what we call open is I'm accepting customers, I'm visibly open, or I'm closed to anybody, but I have employees working in the building. That would be deemed open. We're visiting all of them through code enforcement, educating them about this exposure reduction plan, and providing them a copy that they can post on their entrances to demonstrate to anybody coming in what measures they're taking.
Any kind of detail you can give us around, you know, what the operating instructions are?
So we're very big proponents of what we have seen our community do time and time again. We rise to any occasion. And like most towns, we've seen more disasters than most, and our community has stepped up. And so in terms of what we're providing education based on CDC guidelines of what's effective for exposure reduction. And the expectations are we would work with the individual business owners to determine those measures that are realistic and reasonable for that specific business.
Uh-huh.
You know, not every measure will apply to every business, and get buy-in about the measures that they're willing to implement that sound reasonable for the plan that they will post.
So it seems though, you know, some of the comments I had heard, the city has said they can't tell us not to open. Is that a good paraphrase of how you led your instructions?
Well, realistically, the way we will not, you know, violate the state order, so we will not tell a business, and I've had a lot that have called me, you're getting the official clearance to open from the city of Chico if they're a non-essential business. We are not providing that guidance.
Okay.
What we are conveying is that here's where the city of Chico is right now. We're educating the community on what's essential, not essential. We've done that already. And we're educating now the community on reducing exposure. What we're saying is you have the choice to do what you need to do as a business. Where we are right now is we're educating. We're not blanket issuing shutdown orders, nor are we doing citations. And that's the same thing the county. The county is not doing blanket shutdown orders either. And what our expectation is that businesses will do the responsible thing. If they choose to stay open or to open a non-essential business at this time, that is their choice. There is no directive from the city that's saying that if you open or stay open, we will forcibly shut you down. What businesses have to realize, though, that we have a very smart community. And me as a consumer, when I walk to a business and see that they're not taking appropriate measures to protect me and their employees from exposure, I'm not going to want to patronage that business. And if enough people do that, naturally that business will either realize I need to take appropriate measures or I can't sustain the business the way I'm currently running it. But we as a government are not forcibly shutting down business.
All right, listeners just joining, we are speaking with on a pre-record. This is Wednesday afternoon with Chris Constantine, the assistant city manager and the economic director for the city of Chico. So I know our listeners want to hear something around this. What has changed with the hotline? I remember reading a press release that, you know, call this hotline and we're going to make sure that these non-essential businesses are taken care of. And what's changed with the hotline? Is that still operational?
The hotline is still operational and nothing has changed. I think the way you characterize it isn't exactly accurate. We provided an avenue where folks who were concerned about businesses, in that case, that they're non-essential and still operating and posing a danger to the community, today would be how their exposure reduction measures are not effective, to allow code enforcement to go visit those businesses and determine what exposure they see, and to re-educate that business on what the state order says and now what our exposure reduction requests are of that specific business. So we still would ask that people call when they find businesses that they're very concerned about to allow us to go out and check for ourselves. But there, if there's an expectation that I'm calling so you can go shut down a business, and in a number of cases, my competitor business that I'm closed and they're open, we will not forcibly shut them down at this time. Now, local data, be it public health or other information, may come to bear that we may have to look at our approach and what we're doing and potentially change. But at this point right now, that is where we're at.
So another quick clarification, because that's what I'm really looking to get, something we can hang our hats on in regards to some of these things that are out there in the spheres. But this is another direct quote. Quote, code enforcement isn't actioning complaints. Maybe a little detail around that, because I would expect if someone calls code enforcement, they're going to do something. And what exactly are they going to do?
Well, code enforcement, just like our police department, are governed by a number of different laws and rules that they're implementing. But in its implementation, there's the spirit of the law and there's the letter of the law. And so we could be draconian and say, this says X, so you must do X or else. In the case of Butte County, we have the state order issued by the governor that points to a federal guidance document of what is essential and non-essential. That federal guidance document, when you read it in both its existing and now its most recent form, very clearly delineates that it is completely advisory and up to local jurisdictions to decide what is essential and non-essential in their community. Butte County is one of the few counties in the state of California that has not issued a countywide local public health order that stipulates what is essential and non-essential. And so, therefore, you can't necessarily say there's an absolute black letter law of a specific business that should or should not be open. And so we need to look very carefully when we implement any of these orders and balance that with the public health safety, the economy, and the impacts on our community when we take any action. So code enforcement's job is to go out, educate, explain the what potentially could happen if we don't get compliance, and it's a greater societal. Maybe the state comes in and says, you guys need to do more, or the county comes and says, you need to do more, or we have to decide we need to do more to protect the public. And so the expectation that code enforcement will come in and actually shut down that business is not what we conveyed from the beginning.
But they would, and along this education line, they would kind of say, hey, you probably should be wearing masks and you probably should be washing your hands. I mean, what kind of guidance are they giving the businesses?
Right now, when you look on our website, there'll be a 3-page document. That's the exposure reduction protocol that will be placed on the entrances to the business. And it spans a number of different items.
Uh-huh.
Masks, for definitely. Sanitization, cleaning regularly and sanitizing of high-touch areas. Maintaining 6-foot physical distancing, so marking out from a cashier 6 feet out, cleaning carts and shopping baskets, and a number of other different items that may be or may not be specific to that business, in order to ensure that a business can take the maximum effort to reduce exposure. And by doing so, lower exposure allows for more transactions to occur at that business, whether it be essential or non-essential.
I agree with everything you said in regards to how we rise as a community and how, you know, when the community will come together and, you know, find businesses or point businesses out that aren't, quote unquote, following the rules. But I would ask the question, Chris, you know, if you have to post guidance at the front door and you have to have masks and you have to be doing this and that, I would expect that if you've got a business that the code enforcement has been out there once, twice, this is the third time, and they're still not listening to what they were asked to do, What is a citizen of Chico can I expect the city's going to do to make sure that the health and safety of the customers and the community is maintained?
Well, you have to remember, this exposure reduction protocol is not a requirement. It is strongly recommended. And so we still are leaning on everybody's personal responsibility to, one, do the right thing, and two, gauge for themselves whether they want to expose themselves to the degree of exposure they would have in that specific business. And so will you see Chris Constantine walking into a business, a barber shop, that there are no protections in place and a high level of exposure? No. Will every customer do the same? Our expectation is you would take personal responsibility. If significant numbers of businesses continue to expose the public to high exposures, then we need to reevaluate what we're doing and go from our second phase where we're at right now to a third phase. What that will look like, what that will be, depends on the level of exposure in our community.
All right, Chris, I think that pretty much covered the issues around the businesses, and I do appreciate that. But while I have you on the line, I mean, maybe any details around any of the financial modeling you've done or anything you can share with our listeners about, you know, the hope for when we're going to come out of this and, you know, some of your forecasts.
Well, a lot of that information and questions are what you're seeing in every city, county, yeah, state, and even the nation. And so it's a little too early to tell how exactly we will land. But what we do know, clearly, every business and the government has been impacted and will continue to be impacted. The city has made layoffs. Businesses have laid off or reduced in force. But unlike private business that can subscribe to and get the Paycheck Protection Program, a federal program, there is no such program for the city government. And the city government's revenue are premised on economic activity. And so when the economy takes a dive like it has now with the coronavirus, right, our impacts, our true larger scale impacts, will occur months later and continue for longer than what you're seeing on current business.
So just one quick circle back question. It would seem that everything you've stated will stay in place unless Butte County Health declares an emergency, then you kind of revisit your procedures? Is that a fair assessment? Or
no, we're continuously evaluating what we're doing,
okay,
to try to do,
okay,
the most we can to reduce exposure without getting government overly involved in the business of private business. What I will say, though, the intent of the exposure reduction protocols, while in place now and it being educating businesses in what those protocols are intended to be, more longer term. There is an expectation that this isn't the first and last time that we will be hit by a significant pandemic. And so what we need to realize as a community that's well-educated, committed, and a fantastic place to work, live, and play, that some of these measures are measures we should ensure that are in place on the longer term. They're more hygienic in nature and longer term help protect us against future outbreaks of any type of pandemic or flu.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to kind of close on, Chris, because I think everyone's human. That's the easiest thing to say. But a lot of people are like, hey, 30 days will be over, 60 days will be over. I mean, and the CDC basically said, hey, we expected another outbreak that might be worse in the fall, you know. So I just really want our listeners to be cognizant of the fact that we're in here for the long haul, and certainly we can't keep businesses closed for the long haul, and we're going to have to make some accommodations in between, and I appreciate all the work you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, Gamma Mash for the KZFR Spring Pledge Drive edition of the Without a Roof Radio program, and thank you for being listeners and donors. This is our Spring Pledge Drive virtual. We are an essential business. We've been open since, well, we've been open for 30 years, damn it, this year. It's our 30-year anniversary. It can take more than a pandemic to keep us out of this studio, but we are following good practices. I got my gloves. I got my N95 mask on, and I just appreciate everyone out there listening and supporting your community radio station. You can leave a voicemail, and someone will get back to you. Cheery, happy, well-versed staff or volunteer. You can call us 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. You know, I interviewed Chris today, and I really appreciate it. Chris, you're listening. I got a shout-out. I really appreciated the clarity around that. If you go to chico.ca.us, I believe is the website address, you will be able to see what Mr. Constantine was describing in his interview. But I can say, as a citizen of Chico, the hypothetical question that I presented was literally a business that is flaunting public safety, code enforcement goes out there once, twice, three times, whatever it is. They're not wearing masks. They're not following any of their procedures. I'm thinking the city needs to take some responsibility. I'm going to paraphrase this a little. I'm going to compare it. You know, we had a city council session yesterday where we come up with this hypothetical about, oh, my God, what if there's too much trash in that camp for the homeless person that has no other place to be? So, one, you know, we got to change that so we can move those people along. And as you'll hear in the interview, the city's no longer providing sanitary services through the state, through the city parks. And if anyone from city parks can counter that, I talk to someone that's on the ground. So I'm a little bit upset with this tone of we'll leave it up to the businesses and mob mentality to shut them down. So there's that. Next up is Joy Amaro. And Joy is the Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico. It's kind of fun wearing the N95 mask because I end up touching the mic more than I usually do because the thing sticks out. So if you hear this little scraping, that's what we got going on. But we got Joy Amaro, and Joy's been doing a wonderful job for the city. I think this is her week three as the Homeless Solutions Coordinator. And she gives us a nice update right here, right now. People Powered Radio. Call in and do a donation. I wish I could hear the phone ring. 601-340-KZFR, 601-340-5937. And if you need to know more and you want to donate by check or you want to do it online, do that too. KZFR.org/donate. Matter of fact, give us some stories. Go out and donate through all three of those avenues and give the stories to me. You can send it to WOAroof@yahoo.com. Anyway, back to the radio here on People Powered Radio. I got my N95 mask on here, talking as I have, I think this is the third or fourth week, Wednesday mornings, with Joy Amaro, the Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico. And welcome to KZFR once again, Joy Amaro.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Maybe, actually, I got a couple of points we wanted to cover for this afternoon's program, but maybe the first one would be, you know, kind of a status. What's worked well? What have you implemented the past week on your desk?
Just lots of evaluation, like continuing to push through vetting city properties for either a safe parking or a, you know, sanctioned campground type of thing. So that was my main task last week. And then just really identifying what can we truly do today and what do we need to do long term. And that's what I presented last night.
Oh, nice. How's the encampment team working out? You know, your outreach team's been out there a couple of weeks. You know, I just came from Comanche Creek. We were there, Aaron O'Neill and I. He's from the Poor People's Campaign and giving burritos out. And other than like one area where I think it could use a little bit of love, maybe one guy with a trash bag for 10 minutes and it's cleared up. It looked pretty good over there. But what is the general tone for the outreach teams?
Yeah, I just know that they're out every day doing their due diligence with educating on COVID and providing whatever services they can, you know, linking them to services, encampment, waste disposal. I know there was mass outreach over the weekend. I saw that Chat was actually out there involved in some encampment cleanups. So, you know, the community is really rallying to help people be successful as they shelter in place.
Yeah, by my observation, I could say that as well. Of course, I haven't gone all over town, but I go to a decent amount of the areas, and I just want to thank your team and the folks that are forced to live outside during a pandemic. I think they're doing an amazing job with all of the challenges they're overcoming. And, I know you covered a bunch of things at the city council meeting last night. Maybe give us an executive summary.
Well, I just really wanted to level like the playing field in terms of education and knowledge of what the full continuum of care looks like when you're working with individuals experiencing homelessness. And so by starting off with demonstrating how one would navigate through the system and how difficult it is to navigate through the system, especially, you know, if you've been unsheltered for a very long time. And so I wanted to bring up those points and how, you know, there's many different outputs from when someone is unsheltered and how they would navigate through those. And so that's basically what was my overarching message and notifying that there are indeed a lack of services out there for the unsheltered and that we need to enhance street outreach efforts as well as formulating a navigation center for the unsheltered people to access services, as well as we need to come up with a plan for when over 100 plus people exit the motels. We don't want them to end up from Project Room Key. We don't want them to end up on the street.
So there's over 100 now? You've been able to secure some more rooms, huh?
It was like 90 as of yesterday. Wow. Every day it just kind of grows inches. So by the time the order is lifted, I mean, who knows how many motel rooms there will actually be. It's just as people are identified in encampments and or living in their cars, people are also, you know, calling 211 and self-referring.
Right.
And then they get vetted, you know, making sure that they meet the criteria and such. So I don't know what the end result will be, you know.
It's wonderful you're finding them rooms, because I saw someone at Comanche Creek today, and I told him to call 211 and go through their process. He identified as 67 years old. He wanted a mask. Anyway, I'm going to reach out to the outreach team and kind of see if they can get him a mask and see if he can, you know, call up and hopefully get himself off the street. He was living out of a van down at Comanche Creek.
Yeah, he would qualify for sure.
Well, listeners just joining, we're talking with Joy Amaro, the Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico. I think it's your third full week on the job. What are some of the details on these safe campgrounds, safe parking places that you could share with our listeners?
Details, for instance, it was mainly best practices. So, for instance, you know, in my research, you know, they talked about having smaller lot sizes. They're more manageable, obviously tied with 24-hour, like, monitoring and, you know, tied into wraparound services. You know, they're still, you know, getting connected to stability. And so, you know, it was basically just all around best practices and, you know, what you need and what you don't need in terms of successful programs. And then there's some programs that operate just like bare minimum, and then some programs are more intense. So I was asked to proceed with, you know, kind of coming up with a high end and a low end spectrum of what it would cost to manage something like that. And so that's what I'll be working on.
So another thing to land on, without the meeting minutes in front of me, I'm pretty sure they approved. Mark Orme made a well-positioned request for additional funds, and a lot of that funds was going to go to help pay your salary. But the biggest thing I want to talk about a little bit is the sanitation drops, the toilet drops and the hand washing stations. Now that you've got the money, you know, what do you see for a timeline on that?
Right. So I'm going to be reaching out to Eric Gustafson to talk more about, you know, getting additional hand washing and portable toilets out and about. So that's on my to-do list. I was kind of waiting for that approval before we could move forward.
Now you got not only the approval, but you have the money, right, as well?
Yes.
Right? Those two things are important. Yeah,
yes.
I would expect that to be able to move on that fairly quickly. Matter of fact, we did a nice walk around Comanche Creek. We walked pretty much the main trail. It was like a 45-minute walk, but I know their friends from the DSA, they were looking at dropping one down there in Comanche Creek near the bridge, and that would be like almost a perfect spot. Has your outreach teams identified spots, or who's going to identify the spots to put these additional hand sanitation and porta-potties?
Well, there's been some preliminary conversations already between me and Eric and Sergeant Sandoval, as we've identified. And then, yes, the outreach teams have provided their input as well. So we just need to review that once more and then finalize it.
All right, then. So anything we missed, Joy, that, you know, I haven't asked a specific question about that our listeners need to know here?
No, I think that covers it. You know, it's tops of the waves of what's going on every day. Lots and lots more, you know, things are being accomplished, and we're definitely moving in a positive direction.
I really appreciate that the city's hired you during this pandemic time, and I think allocated the funds last night through August. But it seems your desk is kind of, you know, what needs to be done during the emergency. But by the time you leave your desk, you'll have plans in place. Is that the idea? You'll have plans in place for what kind of services we need post-pandemic?
Yeah, in my opinion, that's like the most important thing, is because the solutions that we put in place now can also translate into long term. And so really being strategic about how we do this is extremely important. And so it's a lot of navigating resources, human and financial, and looking at available service providers' capacity to operate things. So there's a lot of things that still need to be vetted before we could definitely implement something quickly. So that's on my to-do list as well.
Any updates as far as ideas of what you would be looking at? I mean, Navigation Center is really something that sprung up in San Francisco like 3 years ago, where it's kind of like a one-stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are the conversations going on that?
Right. Well, so there were initial conversations a couple months ago around Navigation Center, and the county had received some money to hire a navigator. And they did about, I think she was brought on a month or so ago. Maybe it's probably, actually it's longer than that, probably 2 months. And so there's forward momentum, but obviously COVID has like paused everything. Right. So, you know, I just know that, you know, Don Taylor with the home team branch of Bess is just extremely busy, and asking him to, you know, ramp up, which I will be asking him.
Yeah.
But obviously nothing is going to be moving extremely fast right now. So we just have to remember to give everyone grace, and that we're just all really doing, you know, everything possible to be successful and keeping people, you know, health and healthy.
Yeah, we have to give grace, and things aren't going to move as fast as we'd like. And I can certainly say for our listeners, I don't really feel as if the getting back to normal society is going to happen as fast as we would like as well. This one's going to carry on for a while, and I'm just happy they have people like you and the city staff as well, and a lot of other people that are, you know, helping people survive and thrive in these times. Thanks a lot, Joey Morrow.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right, that was Joey Morrow. That was the fourth interview I've done with Joey, and it's always a pleasure, and I really appreciate all the efforts of her and her team in the city and ongoing sanitation. Let's get those hand-washing stations, and let's get those toilets dropped. And let's get, you know, the city, the parks out there helping pick up trash bags, man. You know, it's a pandemic. Chip in. I got coming up, actually. I got to keep saying the number. I like this number. There's just something about this number I like. Pledge drive, man. We're in the middle of our pledge drive. It's virtual. I think you know why it's virtual. If you don't, you might have just woken up from a coma, and then maybe we should donate money to you. No. Send it here. Send it here. At 601-340-KZFR. That's 601-340-5937. And, you know, we've got some wonderful people that will follow up with you and, you know, reach out to you and look at getting your donation. We really like those monthly renewals and when you give us a credit card and we charge every month. And it keeps us on the air. And I know you want us on the air because we're not nearly as fun and exciting and informative when we're not on the air. And we've been on the air 30 years. Pandemics, we've gone through campfire pandemics, nothing's gonna put us down. Matter of fact, that's my bumper song, Tub Thumping. Anyway, speaking of Tub Thumping, I always love talking to Addison Winslow. You know, he's, you know, cut from the same cloth, not the same exact cloth, but close enough, in that he tells it like it is, and he's not afraid to roll his sleeves up and get dirty and be out there seeing what the heck's going on. And so we're going to hear what's going on in this encampment outreach project right now when I quit talking, from Addison Winslow here on People Powered Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash, I'm doing another report from the field with my friend Addison Winslow, who is one of the outreach volunteer coordinators for the shelter in place during our pandemic here in Chico, California. Welcome to KZFR, Addison Winslow.
Hi.
What can you tell us from the streets, Addison? How's things going the last week or so in outreach, and maybe some of the late-breaking developments after city council last night?
Things are going good. It's stressful. We're not able to get enough food to as many people as we want to. It's consistently, we got to get people out there, figure out how we're going to get the food out there. We got to be like, okay, is the park ranger going to have an issue with us driving food in and picking up trash? And then we have like these right wingers over here that are like raising a fuss that there's trash on the other side of town, and it's a lot of coordinating resources and stuff. After the city council meeting, there are a certain things that are going to change. We have to talk to people now who are a lot of people camping within 50 feet of the creek. There are people that we've talked over the last few weeks, kind of counseled into moving the camps away from the creek so that it wouldn't be on the immediate riparian area, and so that the runoff when the rains come wouldn't take anything in their camp into the waterway, but they're still within 50 feet, and so we have to talk to people about relocating. And there's this additional caveat that Scott Huber put onto Alex Brown's motion last night, and said police will discourage in new encampments, and I don't know what that means. I don't know what will qualify as a new encampment. If somebody's moving away from the waterway and they set up somewhere else, is that a new encampment? And are police going to come and discourage them from that? We don't know what to anticipate, so we're going to talk to people about it and see what we can do to get people best settled in the least ecologically sensitive areas as fast as we can.
You know, I was out there today with Aaron O'Neill this morning, and we actually spoke to someone that was right there near the parking lot. It was just about 50 feet back from the creek, so we let her know, you know, mm-hmm. what was up. And we thought she was okay where she was at, but the food issue, man, we gave a burrito to a guy, said he was starving, and by the time I, like, talked to his friends for a minute, he finished it, so I gave him a second one. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of hunger going on out there.
Yeah, we got some great meals today and yesterday, as a matter of fact. Somebody, a very great volunteer, Nancy, from her home cooked today, like, 60 meals. I think she got 60 meals for us today that are
nice.
Like, wonderful, like, hot meals we can bring out to people.
Nice.
And having people cook in their homes and we can just pick it up from them and take it out is amazing. And a lot of people who are sheltering in place is kind of like they have the opportunity to do that. So that's a huge benefit, yeah.
Well, put me down for Mondays. I'll drop off burritos every Monday at the location.
Let me put you on the sheet.
Yeah. Put me on the sheet, Addison Winslow. Put me on the sheet. Let's get back a little bit to this no new encampment. And I know how someone that's been delivering burritos for me, and she was like a little disappointed. She said, all those encampments that I saw in Lower Bidwell are gone this week, Bill. And the whole area has been, you know, taking all of those places down where they used to hide. So then today I go to Lost Park down there off of First Street, mm-hmm. near 7-Eleven. And that's been kind of a shifting sand over there, in that I'd go and I'd see three or four encampments. And then maybe the next day, three or two, or, you know, it's kind of people moving in and out. Today, I only saw two. So I said to Aaron, I said, based on what they did last night, they basically just said, no more encamping in Lost Park because we've got two encampments right here, and we're discouraging anyone else to come into this encampment. So I'm really concerned that what happened last night is just a backdoor for sweeping folks out of their encampments. The other thing people that may not understand that hasn't covered this desk for 8 years is people that are homeless, their life is moving camps to get away from other homeless people, or the cops are arresting them. So movement of camps is something that happens. And I was really disappointed with that. Maybe it's a good time to get your feedback on the no new encampments.
I did talk to the vice mayor, and I did write an email to the city council as a whole, which at least I know Ann Schwab read, and I specifically asked that they do not discourage new encampments, because the process of people settling down somewhere, not like knowing that they're not going to be arrested by police and determining a spot, like, based on that. Previously, people would have the major concern of visibility.
Yep.
And if they're visible from the road, they would get complaints. Police would get complaints. Park rangers would get complaints. And they come and they arrest them. They tell them to move because it doesn't look good to the people that are walking or whatever. And that's not a concern anymore. That's what pushed people to the edge of the water side where they're hidden in the brush. And people are setting up camps, like, with that new knowledge, with that new, like freedom of picking a spot. And I think that benefited a lot from the perspective of pollution of the waterways and such, because people have been going away from them. But now not allowing new encampments means if we get a tent for somebody, and people have asked, can we get a tent? I'll set up right here. And we know it's a good place that we can service, so we can help them shelter in place. We know that there's, get the trash out. We know that it's not going to lead to pollution of the waterways. But now I don't know what to tell people if they want to set up a new encampment there. And it's like we can try and support them and stuff. I don't know. I can't tell them that police aren't going to discourage them from that. And yeah, I mean, that causes a lot of difficulties. I don't think that there's a totally, like, rhyme and reason to the way that the city council is trying to direct city staff, and the city staff is, like, seem to only have so much of a clue what the police are doing generally. And they want to use their own discretion, and I don't trust them to use their own discretion, because I have talked to people about what they're doing, and it doesn't sound the same as the way they portray it. It's not helpful to the situation.
No, it's not.
There's a lot of difficulties as a result of that.
It's a huge mixed message, because it seems to be, you know, some people you talk to, they're like, I haven't been bothered. It's awesome. But again, anyway, we could spend 20 minutes talking about the things we've seen over the last 3-4 weeks that would dispute Chief O'Brien's, you know, passion about don't tell the police what to do. The other thing, maybe I'm going to rant right now. I don't understand Chief O'Brien's whole scheme here, Addison, in that shows that you don't trust us to do what you asked us to do. If I was the chief of police, I guess that's probably not going to happen, I'd be like, I really thank you, city council, for giving us specific, direct instructions on how we should respond during a pandemic, and this is going to be extremely helpful to my department. No, that department has been on the offensive. They've been, you know, crass. I have been very disappointed in the response to the police to get proper direction during a pandemic. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's blatantly authoritarian, the attitude towards, like, the city council should not be directing the police in regard to this. The police are not specialists in dealing with homelessness by any means. They're specialists in a particular way of dealing with homelessness, which is to treat them like criminals and to arouse them as criminals, which is why we're qualified outreach workers, because we're building relationships with people. People trust us. We don't care what nonviolent offenses, what warrant, what probation status people have. And keeping that distance from that is we're here to support them. We're here to support them supporting themselves. Gives us a different kind of relationship that the police don't have. I don't know what's going on with the police chief. He was agitated last night. It was like almost red in the face saying he was offended.
Offended? By what?
The police were boots on the ground before outreach workers. I don't know. They weren't giving out hand sanitizer. I know that much. Whatever their boots were doing on the ground. So I don't get the point of it, and I don't get what they think the police, like, deserve all of this esteem and deserve to be responsible for everything, but they're not helpful in this situation. From when we're trying to help people shelter in place, we're not trying to bust criminals. So, like, they can be called when we need to bust criminals, but I think they should just stay out of this. And the fact that the city staff, the fact that these, like Terry DeBose called out CSA specifically, saying that we were in the city council, I guess, for agreeing with us that the police need this direction in this situation and managing a public health crisis. They need direction. And the idea that police would be the experts in that matter, or that we should just defer to police anyway, it's absurd. It definitely goes in, like, an authoritarian direction. There was a right-wing pact that was called Citizens for Accountable Governance a few years ago, before Citizens for Safe Chico. And I guess they've dropped the whole accountable governance thing, because now they're criticizing city council for, like, asking some accountability from city staff.
Well, I asked specifically that. I've seen her at a couple of places delivering burritos, and she's in Cranchy Creek now, right near the parking lot. But I asked her some specific questions. She said, yeah, the police were here like three times yesterday. You know, she didn't seem like the friends were showing up. But I asked them specifically, and I asked a couple other tents today, are the police doing anything other than coming here and, you know, telling you to move or saying to clean it up? Are they giving you bags? Are they giving you anything other than something out of their mouth? They said, no, they don't. They never give us anything. I think it's BS. I think that's
far from giving them anything. I believe, because my coworker, Will, so we have some relationship. We can have communication stuff with the Target team, which is supposed to be on the ground for the police, doing, I don't know, just not going after people as being criminals, but being like a front of the contact. And we always go giving out stuff. That's actually a personal policy of mine. I don't go and ask for some information without bringing a pair of socks or something for somebody. Yeah. But they can't do that, I guess. It's against their rules. I don't know who wrote the rules, but they can't share stuff.
Oh, they can't share stuff.
Yeah. No, they can't share stuff.
So
The water, trash bags, it was like any tangible items, like, they're not allowed to give out. So
maybe we should get that on the emergency city council, you know, because these police are showing up in all these encampments. It seems like it would be really good boots on the ground to actually help people, other than coming over there kind of like whatever they're doing.
Cops getting like a hot dog stand out there. Parking lot. I could see that.
Or, you know, someone says, I really need hydrogen peroxide. Take a look at my wound. You know, I don't know. Maybe they get help with that. Or I really need more trash bags, you know?
That feels appropriate to me, yeah.
Anyway, it's frustrating. It's frustrating times, you know, when you can't help someone that's an obvious need. And anything we missed, Addison? Thank you for letting me rant a little bit. For folks just joining up with Addison.
Hey, there's a lot to rant about.
Without a Roof radio program. Some closing comments from you, Addison. What's on your heart that we may not have touched upon?
Oh, there's a lot. You know, it's a big struggle to manage this. I know it seems like there's not a lot of money being offered.
No.
But there's a lot of asked from us. And so we're, as volunteers, being heavily relied upon by the city, by the county, by the whole, like, combined response to the pandemic. We have a lot of volunteers. We have a lot of great volunteers, but people also have jobs. People also have, like, other things to do and stuff, and we could use a lot of support from the community. And this is a very, like, special time right now, I think, to demonstrate that taking a non-repressive approach to homelessness is better when it comes to trash, when it comes to people, you know, when it comes to the messes being made and to issues. Just having people have that kind of security is a good base level. And I don't think that the camps where they're at right now are by any means a permanent solution. Very much far from it, but it's preferable to the what has been a permanent solution of running people off into the creeks right now. And this is the time to show it. The city's not helping us. The park rangers have stopped picking up trash, and they haven't. We haven't been able to arrange anything else where they put in vehicles that we can just pile up the trash in. So we need help to try to, like, make this work out well. You know, people need support when they're living out in camps and don't have any money, and we could use support from the community on this.
You know, one thing to say before I ask you, for folks that can hear how to volunteer, but I'll give you the perfect color for our listeners, Addison. I'm down there and a landscaping crew shows up, full-blown landscaping crew at Comanche Creek. with blowers. Blah, they're blowing dust. They're literally blowing dust. It's I don't know what they would do it. And they would trim in a couple of flowers. And I kind of asked one of the guys, you guys don't pick up trash. And he kind of looked at me like, how dare you ask me this question? So I'm sitting there going, you know, as a citizen, I'm going, why are we more concerned about landscaping, blowing dust in a parking lot than actually picking up the effing trash that's sitting right next to the truck, right? That is a misuse of city resources to have them go, oh, I'm sorry, I have no money to pick up the trash, but I can send someone out with a leaf blower to blow dirt into the dust into the air. I mean, it's just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
That's my last rant, I promise.
Yeah. Well, I will say Dawson Landscaping is, I've been paid by the city, and they pick up trash along Humboldt Park, and this is why there's been some things on Facebook shared about, like, Humboldt Park is this, like, wow, really creative, innovative way of, like, managing a campground and stuff, but really it's just somebody comes and picks up the trash. There's not really much more to it than that. There's volunteers in the park that live there to pick up trash, but
cool. So there was so there is some spots where they're picking up trash, the landscaping crews. That's good news.
Yeah, I don't know why it can't be generalized. I didn't make the rules.
Yeah, you know, I might reach out to the city council and go, well, can't you generalize that? We could really use some help picking up trash. Mm-hmm. All right, my friend, give us some way to volunteer for this wonderful outreach program. See if we can get a few people that are listening to jump on the ship.
Okay, yeah, there's a sign up that that my coworker Angel made, and it's in on the Safe Space social media has shared it. It's just a website called Sign Up, and there's it's really clear there. But I also put out my phone number, 530-433-3450.
Maybe one more time so people can get it.
530-433-3450.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for what you're doing. You got me down on the list Mondays, right? I'm going to drop off burritos.
Yeah. I wrote that down on the list.
Keep up the good work. All right. Listeners just joining. Gamble Mash here for the Without a Roof radio program, our Spring Pledge Drive edition. And that was Addison Winslow, one of two volunteer outreach coordinators with the Houseless Encampment Outreach Team. And he talked a lot about volunteering for that group. It's a great group of folks. And he mentioned Safe Space signups. Quote unquote, they're using Safe Space social media to broadcast a signup.com link. What I did is I went out and created a tiny URL link that you can get by doing this. Type in tiny, T-I-N-Y, URL. .com/outreachchico, and that'll take you right to their sign-up site. Or, as Addison Winslow had said, you can give them a call at
530-433-3450.
A lot of numbers going on. You know, this is so cool. Sue comes in, and we're kind of talking about it. It's a whole new thing. We've never done it virtually. She says, what happens when we call the number, and we thought it was a voicemail? But this is the best pledge pitch I got the whole time. You want Leah McKeon is also a volunteer coordinator, and just one of the most amazing people I know. If you call right now between 6 and 7 during Sue's show, you get to talk to Leah McKeon.
She'll answer the phone.
Yeah. Leah's on the phone. And she's just got such a way and such a beautiful heart. And she's got a nice voice. You got to call and hear Leah McKeon. And that hear Leah McKeon. Call 601-340-5937. And pledge. And pledging, you know, a lot of listeners and supporters. And we're made possible by a bunch of folks, including Om Foods. I love these guys. With an organic, non-GMO Whole Foods, some fish and dairy free menu. Open 12 noon, 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. Their full menu is at iloveomfoods.com for pickup orders only. Social distancing required. Orders will be on the tables with your names on them. Please wait outside till your order is ready. Om Foods thanks you for keeping the community safe. Details, 530-965-5263. That's wonderful. COVID-19 compliance there. Shout out, Om Foods. And by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available. Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached 518-0924. Going out with my song, Tub Thumpin'. Until next week, be kind, be gentle, be you. People Power Radio.